how do you get from envelopes to Dragon's Den? Well, here's somebody who's going to tell you. I'm Liz Taylor, and on this series of Events That Made Me, I'm talking to some of the most inspirational women I can think of. These are women who've been innovative, creative, and determined to follow their gut. Today's guest would have been equally welcome on my last series, which featured some huge success stories, because Sarah Davies, MBE, is a leading businesswoman, entrepreneur, and now Dragon. So here's a woman from County Durham who comes out making millions.
If you'd asked me when I was a kid, I would never have said, oh, when I grow up, I want to be an entrepreneur. Because an entrepreneur sounds like a really big fancy word. And little girls from pit villages in the north of England don't use big fancy words like that. And that's not the sort of things we dream about. But I knew I wanted to run my own business. Both my parents had their own business. They ran a little wallpaper and paint shop in our village. My dad had a little transport company. And I think because I'd grown up only ever known that, I always find that being an entrepreneur, running your own business, it's not a career choice. It's a way of life. And because I'd only ever grown up knowing that way of life, I knew that when I was older, I was happy to have that way of life and all the benefits that came with it. And I wasn't shy of the hard work that it involved. So I went off to university to learn management, knowing that when I was a little bit older, if I'd learned all the good stuff, then it might be that I could come home and teach my mum and dad a thing or two. You know, they'd been through the university of life. I could then show them, well, this is how we learn about it out of a textbook, and let's apply the two together. And so that was the plan. And I always thought that I might take over the family business when I graduated. But actually, in that year, I went and did one of those degrees, Liz, where you do a couple of years studying and then you go and work for a year and then you do your final year back studying. And in that year, I went and worked for this tiny, weeny little craft company. And being totally honest, it wasn't the placement that the university sent me on, but I'd been dating my boyfriend, now my husband, since I was 15, and I'm a right country bumpkin. So I could think of nothing worse than having to trot off down to London and live away from home in the big city for a year on my own. So I arranged this little placement in a tiny little village near to where we are. Some friends of friends had set up a business in the craft industry. Now, I knew people crafted. I had no idea the industry was this big. And I mean, this was 20 years ago. It's even bigger now. It was the fact that it wasn't just craft, it was handmade cards that this business was in. And it was a tiny little company, just had a half a dozen staff or whatever. And I went to work for that company and I fell in love with the customers. Because the people who do craft, it's not just a hobby. It's so much more for them. It's a real passion. And I just thought, I want to have a business in this industry. In the year that I worked there, I used to go into a lot of consumer shows. I would meet a lot of the customers. And by the time I graduated, I just had a head full of loads of ideas. And I felt like the industry was just ready for someone like me to kind of come in. And whereas a lot of the other people in the industry were artisans who turned their hobby into a business, I kind of approached it in a business respect. And I saw the industry as, well, if I can research what the customer wants and design products for that customer, surely I'll be onto a winner. Now, if you fast forward, well, 17 years now I've had the business, Crafters Companion, we're a household name, not only here in the UK, but across the US and Europe. We turn over about 40 million. We've got 250 staff. And people always find it astounding when they meet me. And they say, all of that from craft? I didn't know craft was that big.
It was a tool, wasn't it? It was a tool that you'd... That's what absolutely blew me away. I mean, it wasn't sort of a whole... We're not talking about somebody here who walked into an industry and saw a gap in the market. It was an actual tangible item. And you were turning over... What was it? £500,000 at university at the age of 18. I mean, I know this is probably boring to you, but and it's for me. Just humour me. I just want to know what the tool was.
I love telling the story. So, right, it's called the Enveloper. That was the tool that launched my career. So if you think about it, say if I can sit here and say to you, oh yes, I designed a tool to make envelopes, you probably think, how on earth did that girl make millions out of selling something that makes envelopes? Really? But what it was is, if you are someone who's into making handmade cards and you spend all this time making beautiful handmade cards, I then say to you, you're not going to put that lovely card in a plain white or a manila envelope, are you? It's like you wouldn't wrap a beautiful present up in newspaper. You know, you'd really want to make it look spectacular. And that's what I did with my enveloper tool. I designed a product. My dad's an engineer, so he helped me design it. We did a few little wooden prototypes. And it literally takes a piece of paper, and you can take any paper, beautiful printed papers, you could use wallpaper, anything you want, and it folds it into any size envelope to match any card that you've made. And when we kind of stumbled on how to do it, I was like, Dad, this is genius. The ladies who were into making cards would love this. And so we designed it. I applied for a patent. And then once I had the idea, it was a case of how do I get this out to the masses? How do I tell the most amount of people? And I knew that the shopping channels were really big for crafts. And I remember ringing up the shopping channel and you'll learn with me, I could sell sand to the Arabs, I can talk anyone into anything. And I said to that buyer, you don't need to take much of a chance on us. Just next time you've got a big card, making sure, can I come in at the end of the show? And when you finish making the cards, I'll make a little envelope for the cards. And it's a nice $14.99 upsell. I think everybody would watch and would want to buy one. And I talked my way into a little 5-minute slot on TV. And literally, as soon as you can show people how easy it is, and I had an engaged audience there because everyone was watching was a card maker. It was a special card making show. And we literally sold thousands and thousands on the first day. Once we launched it in the industry, it was 24th of October 2005. And I launched it, and literally the little joiner in our village was making them out of MDF for me. And he had to put all of his best lads on to churning out envelopers. We were churning out 1,000 a day at one point, and he could not keep up with the demand. I'd sold 30,000 envelopers by the time we got to Christmas that year. It was the product to have in the craft industry. And honestly, that one product is what kind of launched me in the industry.
You see, what I think is really relevant here is that it's not the product, it's the observation. It's the fact that you saw that thing. And I think that for people out there, would-be entrepreneurs, and you know, you're on Dragon's Den, which we're going to come to, you must see hundreds come through the door. I'm sure there are many more that we actually don't see on television. But it's actually spotting that thing. To spot that at your age and to turn it into a multi-million pound business is just total bloody genius. Never mind entrepreneurship, it's bloody genius.
You're right that I've seen loads of it in the den, because you see all these people coming in with ideas, and it's when an idea solves a problem. And you can really, you've just got to observe your customers, understand your market, and look at what problems do they have that I could solve. And it's the same that you'll find the products that I really like investing in Dragon's Den is where someone's done exactly what I did in my industry. You know, I understood the crafter, I understood what they were passionate about, and I understood what problems they had and how I could solve them. There are a lot of the businesses I invest in now are doing exactly the same thing in just a different industry. And if you've got that product that really solves a genuine need, and you've got passion, drive and determination, you can make any business succeed.
Is there anything on Dragon's Den that you regret not investing in?
Do you know what? I get asked this a lot, actually. So I'm looking, we've just finished filming what was my fourth series now. And if I look back, I say no to a lot more than I say yes to. And what I always find really interesting is one of them ones where you get all five dragons gunning for it. All five of us going for it, and we're all fighting for it. And some of the other dragons find it really surprising that sometimes we get those businesses and I actually bow out. If I can tell it's one we're all going for, sometimes I won't fight for it. And I'll say, no, do you know what? I'm going to let this one go. And it's not because it wasn't a great business, but it's because I don't think of the five investors sitting there, I don't necessarily think I was the best one. If I do think I'm the best one, I will fight for it tooth and nail and make sure I'm going to win it and be gutted on the occasion that I don't. But we all have our own areas that we kind of sit best at. And when it comes to product and innovation and problem solving, especially because I do a lot on TV shopping as well, products that you can then go on TV shopping and sell, that's right in my wheelhouse. I'll fight tooth and nail. But if it's a brilliant tech business, or perhaps it's something that's in the fashion area, I look and I think, do you know what? I'd like to invest in this business, but there's probably other dragons that are better for this than me. So I'm not going to fight them for it, because actually, if I was sitting where the entrepreneur was, I'd pick one of the others. And I'm always really mindful of that. So yes, there's a couple of products that have got away, but not for lack of me seeing the opportunity, I think I would say.
And you know what the next question is going to be, and you don't have to answer it.
Go on.
Is there any product that you regret investing in?
I never regret investing in anything, but I tell you what has been really eye-opening for me. And I've learned this. I learned this actually even before Dragon's Den, because I first did investing about 15 years ago. I was involved in an all-female investment group in the Northeast. And I would say what I used to think is, I used to think that a great product was enough to make a business great. And what I have learned over the last 15 years is you can have a mediocre product, but a fantastic entrepreneur, and it will do phenomenally well. You can have the best product in the world, but if that entrepreneur is not excited and passionate and driven and enthusiastic about that product, it's never going to work. Because business is really hard. Business is tough. I said earlier on that you've really got to be so committed. It's a lifestyle choice, not a business choice. And so when I get people coming into the den, I look at that entrepreneur and I've got to think, have you really got what it takes to make the sacrifices that I know you're going to need to make this business a huge success? And have you got the right drive and ambition? Because the worst thing I found is having an entrepreneur where I need to sit and put a rocket up their behind. If I need to be chasing you, you're not the right person for me to invest in. I want someone who's constantly wanting to be on my deck. Sarah, I've had another idea. How can you help us with that? Have you got any contacts for this? You've been and dealt with this. How have you overcome this problem? If it's someone waiting on the end of the phone for me to ring them up every few months and say, how's the business going now? That's not an investment for me. I need people who are passionate and driven to succeed. I just need to help them along the way.
Sarah, how did you get involved with an all-female investing group? Because that's something that I would really champion.
Yes. So when I was craggy, I think I was only about 23 at the time, I was approached by a woman in our region, Caroline Theobald. She was a really big networker in our area. And she felt like there was a huge gap in the market. There were so many investment groups out there, but they were all run by men and the board tables were filled with men. And actually, in looking around the country, we only found one other female investment group based in London. So she wanted to set up an all-female investment group in the Northeast. And so what she did is she went out to a lot of the high net worth female entrepreneurs in the region, a lot of which whom had, you know, built businesses, exited businesses. And she got us all together in a room and said, what I want to do is I want to build a group of women who can be investors, but I think women invest in a different way. We're not just about the money that we can make here. It's about how can we nurture and really empower those entrepreneurs to go on and become the best versions of themselves. And we didn't just invest in female businesses. We didn't just invest in Northeast businesses. We had all sorts of ages, genders, demographics from across the country. But it was great because I remember people used to say to me, what is this Gabriel Investors group that you're in, Sarah? And the way I used to describe it was, I used to say, do you know, we're a bit like Dragon's Den, but we call ourselves angels, not dragons.
I'm all for all female investing groups, how they work together, not only to invest, but to encourage those new businesses to be the best version that they can be. It's been hugely challenging being a female in a man's world, going to the bank to borrow money, going to a solicitor to fight your corner, going into a corporate client with a board of six men and convincing them that you know and you are right. But believing in yourself is half the battle. As a female, I have never been intimidated in business. If I've pitched for a job, gone for a loan, or been to my solicitor, or stood up in court, I am neither an angel nor a dragon. I am a combination of both, because a woman in a man's world needs to have wings and fire. A contributor to Sarah's business in the early days was shopping TV, something that we're all addicted to, I think. I want to know how that got started and why it was so important to her at that time.
I've spent 20 years now doing shopping TV all over the world. I have the best job in the world. I get to fly all over the world and work on various shopping channels and teach people how to craft. But it's a way of me funneling my business, because then that craft that I teach you, you can buy everything that I'm using. That's how we drive the commercial side.
So give us an example. Just give us an example.
So I would go on QVC, or I go over to QVC Germany, I go over to HSN. The great thing is as well, I've actually got a big show tonight through the night, and I don't have to be in America anymore. I can broadcast it right from the very studio I'm sitting here talking to you in. And we will broadcast prime time US, doing a big launch at 1 a.m. US time. So I'm going to be in the studios for about 3 a.m. and I'm on air from 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. But this has been my life for 20 years now, TV shopping. And what I always wanted to know is, could I take the skills that I'd learned on TV in the land of TV shopping and apply them to mainstream TV? And Be Creative was my opportunity to do that. A local company came to me, and it's right when Freeview had started to launch that Channel 8, and they had to do local programming output from the region. And they came and said, we've seen you, you're a creative entrepreneur, would you fancy doing a craft show? Now, I'm a creative person, my business is card making, but I'm one of those people that I can pretty much turn my hand to any craft. And I did two series of this Be Creative show, whereby I taught everything from crochet to jewellery making to doing ceramics, and we did flower create, everything. Every episode was a different craft that we learned. And I had to learn those crafts to be able to teach them on TV. And I think that was my first venture into proper TV, as it was, not selly telly. And it really gave me a taste for it. I love doing TV, even to this day now, whether it's shopping telly or whether it's, you know, BBC broadcast TV. I love going on TV. And it is, what you say, Liz, it's brand. I get to show people who I am, put my heart on my sleeve and go out there, whether it's teaching them to craft or hosting Morning Live and looking at the, you know, the issues of the day.
So explain Strictly.
So
now that is not a craft, Sarah.
No, it's
that
not.
That is one challenge.
So Strictly has always been my favourite show on TV. I just found the whole thing fascinating. I love the idea of learning a new skill, presenting on TV, everything that came with it, being Strictlyfied. I love the thought of doing it. And it was always one of the things that was on my bucket list. And my friends would say to me, they would laugh at me when I would say one day I'd love to go on Strictly. And they'd be like, Sarah, you're hardly A-list enough to get on Strictly. Just go on the shopping channels. And I would joke and I would say, one day, guys, just you wait and see one day. And actually, it was obviously from doing Dragon's Den. And again, that Dragon's Den was just mixing together two things that I knew really well. I'd been in investing with the group I'd invested in years ago, like I told you about. I'd learned how to do real TV. So when I spoke to them about Dragon's Den, it was just bringing together two skills that I felt I had and doing them both at once. And of course, Dragon's Den, once I raised my own profile, being on Dragon's Den a bit more, I was approached by Strictly to come on the show. Now, the interesting thing is, my dad used to be a ballroom dancer when he was younger. And when I say younger, between the ages of like 10 and 16, he never did it at a really high level, but he danced in front of Len Goodman in Blackpool. That was his claim to fame. And so all these years, I would say, I'm going to go on, you know, one day my life's ambition is to go on Strictly. And my dad would laugh at me and he'd say, kid, it's never going to happen. And I would say, well, why not, Dad? And he'd say, well, you'd be no good. You've got two left feet. You're overweight. You're totally uncoordinated. Dancing's all about elegance and grace. You haven't got any of that. He just used to say to me, he laughed. And do you know what? I remember when me and my sister were kids, they sent us off for ballroom dancing lessons and we must have been rubbish because we went for about three lessons, I think, and never went back again. So it's just something I never had a natural flair or skill for dancing, but I found the whole show just, I was totally enamoured with it. So yes, when I got the call to go on Strictly, I was absolutely doing it. And I didn't actually tell my mum and dad or anybody, you're not supposed to tell anybody, but I really took that to heart until the date was announced on Good Morning Britain. And I remember I told my sister and she went over and she was like, oh, Sarah's going to be on Good Morning Britain this morning, mum. And my mum just assumed I would be talking about Dragon's Den or whatever it was. And our Helen said their faces, my mum had spattered porridge across the whole of the living room. When literally they had the glitter balls and the sparkles and they revealed me and my mum was like, what's going on? And I remember ringing my dad straight after. And I said, do you still think I can't do it now, Dad? He said, well, yes. I'm just really hoping you're going to prove me wrong now, kid.
Do you still dance, Sarah? Have you carried on?
Do you know, I absolutely love it.
Do you?
So I did the show back end of last year. And then because I got to do the tour, I was one of the really lucky people who got to do the tour this year. I knew that that would take me through another few months. So over Christmas, I needed to go practice ready for the tour. And I went to the little dance school where I used to train with Ali Ash every day. I booked the room out and I got my dad to come along and practice with me. And it was the most special thing, being able to dance with my dad. But God love him. He is, he's in his 70s now. And he was all right practicing my slow fox with me. But as soon as I showed him the steps for my quick step, he was like, there's no chance I can do that, kid. It's 72-year-old. I cannot quick step around that floor with you like that. So I had to ask one of the dance teachers from the school. I said, oh, would you practice my dances with me? I just need you to watch it on YouTube and learn the steps and then you can come and practice. And you know, it was so weird, Liz, being in someone else's arms. You know, I've been so used to being in Ali Asher's arms and being driven around that dance floor by a 19 times world champion. I felt like it was his dance and it felt like cheating on your boyfriend, doing it in some other man's arms. It was the weirdest thing. So I've loved dancing and I've been back to that little dance studio and danced with some of the other dance teachers a few times. But every time I've done it, it's just felt really wrong not doing it with Ali Asher. So I've told him this summer, he's been on tour for the last few months. And I've told him, now he's finished tour, he's actually coming up in a few weeks. And I was like, you're coming up to dance with me? Because I really miss dancing. And it's way more fun doing it with you than anybody
else. Well, you're going to hate what's coming now. This was not planned because we're going to move on to your MBE. But during lockdown, I decided to do a fundraiser for charity, which was meant to happen this year. And it's not happened this year because for various reasons, and it's been postponed to next year. And Ruth and Eamon have been brilliant getting on board with me. So to cut a long story short, we're doing It's Strictly Dance. It's in Manchester. So Anton and Arlene Phillips are on my judging panel with, I think, Lisa Riley and another.
Right.
Ruth and Eamon is my Bruce. Kath Tilsley is going to be Tess Daly. Sally Lindsay is going to be Claudia Winkleman. And I've got a whole host. We're going to raise money for five charities. And the idea is that each charity will get £250,000. So we'll raise £1 million and it'll be split. So Howard Donald has agreed to DJ, providing we donate to a children's charity. And you, Mrs., are going to dance.
Right. Is that right? Well, it's a good job for you. I love dancing.
I've got you in. I wouldn't have cornered you if you didn't love it. But that story, we've got to have you on board. Tell me about the MBE. First of all, your parents must have been beside themselves. I mean, you've had lots of recognition and awards, but that's something really special. How old were you?
So I was 32 at the time, and I have a few other, I would say, friends or acquaintances I've come across in business who've been awarded MBEs or OBEs or CBEs. And it feels like the ultimate accolade to be recognised by the palace, by the Queen herself, for some contribution that you've made to society. And it was one of them things where I always thought one day that would be incredible. And I didn't even know the pros. I don't know how you go about getting an MBE. And I've since learned that someone puts you forward for it. So here's the thing. I still to this day have no idea who would have put me forward for that. I've spoke to everybody. I can think of my family, my friends. And actually the thing that they say to me is, and I believe them, they say, we would absolutely have put you forward, Sarah. But maybe it's when you were in your 50s or your 60s, you know, when you'd had 60 years of contributing, you know, it would never have occurred to us that somebody at your age would receive an MBE for services to the economy. I mean, it just felt unheard of. So when I got the letter through, I remember it kind of came and I thought, I don't even know if this is real. It just seemed, because it says you have been nominated to receive. And I remember I didn't know what to do. So I actually just rang the palace. And I know that seems ridiculous, but there was a phone number on the bottom. I rang the palace and I said, I really hope you don't think I'm being rude, but I've received this letter to say that you're considering me for an MBE. Like, when do you decide? And they said, no, if you've received the letter, that's because we're giving you one. We've decided. I'm like, oh, right. Oh, that's incredible. And it was very secretive. I was told I wasn't allowed to tell anybody and, you know, it would come out in the papers in a couple of months or whatever. And then I remember it got to like the week of, and obviously they'd let the press know, and I was doing interviews with loads of different press, and I still hadn't told my mum and dad because it had to be kept a secret. And I wanted to do something really special. So I wanted to book a lovely big dinner and tell them on the Friday night before it came out in the papers on the Saturday. And again, I didn't know if I was allowed to do that. So I rang the palace again and I said, is it all right if I tell my mum and dad on Friday night before it comes out in the papers? They won't say anything, they won't put anything on social media. And I think they just laughed at me on the other end of the phone because I was so by the book, you know. So anyway, we had this wonderful big family meal. There was about 25 of us, friends and family, around the table. And I was pregnant at the time with our Charlie, my second. And I remember all the family just being really nervous as hell about why on earth is she taking us to dinner? What are they going to tell us? Is it twins? I remember that was the assumption. It must be twins and she's going to get us drunk to tell us because we don't know how we're going to cope, you know. So we're all sat around the table and my husband got up and made a speech. It's only the second time in our life he's done this, you know, after the wedding speech. And I just remember looking over at my mum and dad, and my dad looked like he was about to burst. he started crying, and then he was embarrassed that he was crying. He didn't want to cry in front of people, so he got up to walk out, but then he didn't want to walk out and miss anything. And my mum's going, it's all right, Frank. He just didn't know what to do with himself. And I just think, as much as it was wonderful going to the palace and meeting Prince William and getting my medal and everything, nothing comes close to the feeling of looking over at my dad on that Friday night when my husband said they'd given her an MBE, and he was just literally the proudest dad in the whole world. It was incredible.
Sarah reminds me so much of Jenny Johnson, who I spoke to on the last series of Events That Made Me. They are both these incredibly inspirational women who started businesses that have just exploded. I especially love this story about how Jenny came up with the idea for Kids Aloud. Just like Sarah, she'd seen a gap in the market and knew what it would take to fill it.
Due to the fact that my personal circumstances had changed, instead of relying on my mum to help me with my childcare, I was looking at the childcare market for the first time. So myself and my husband literally had a day off work, and we went round every childcare provider that there was in our local area. And this is 20 years ago now. I'm always careful to qualify that, because I don't want anybody listening to this, first of all, worrying about their own current childcare, and B, thinking that I'm slating childcare generally. I'm talking about a market 20 years old, but when I was looking at the market then, there was nothing that I would have been happy to use. And that's how I felt about it. I went round everything that there was to offer, local to where I lived, and felt there was nothing that gave me the comfort that I'd be happy for my child to spend the day there.
Her story about childcare is interesting, because so many of the women that I've talked to for this series of Events That Made Me have discussed with me about what it's like being a mum, whether that's to support the family or to manage work and family life. I wanted to get Sarah's take on juggling all balls, and why she keeps her family life so very private.
So my boys are 5 and 8.
Oh gosh, they're babies.
And you know what? I'm really pleased. They're just little. I'm so pleased you've brought up about them, Liz. So I am a working mum. I'm really proud to be a working mum dealing with the juggle. The struggle is absolutely real. And it's one of those things, because I choose not to put my kids in the public eye from a media perspective, and I'll come on and explain to you why I don't. I think because of that, a lot of people either don't realise I've got kids, or they think I don't want to talk about it. And I really want to be the person who champions other working mums. But for me, I remember, so when I got the gig on Dragon's Den, none of my family were overly supportive of me doing it. Nobody was keen for me to do it. And I asked my husband, you know, why was he not bothered? And he just said, I don't see why would you want to do it? We have a great life. We're busy with the business. Why would you want to put yourself in the public eye and everything that comes with that? Because that was not something I was seeking. I wasn't looking to become a celebrity in inverted commas. I've got a fantastic career with the business and I never want to change that. Dragon's Den was just, as I sometimes like to put it, an expensive hobby, really. expensive hobby on the side. So that was talking to my husband. But talking to my dad, he wouldn't spit it out why he was really bothered. And in the end, I got him to admit what it was. And he just said, I'm really worried about the kids, and I'm really worried about people coming up to the kids or people recognising the kids. And what he was really worried about is someone stealing the kids. He's worried about that. And he said, you know, there's some crazy people out there, and I don't want them to think, you know, you've got a huge profile of being a millionaire. He said, you would be a target for that sort of thing. And it terrifies him, absolutely terrifies him. So we made the decision that we would keep the kids completely out of the public eye. So I'm never photographed with them or anything. But I'm such a big family person, and want to be a real advocate there of how working mums juggle. So it's always brilliant to have the opportunity to talk about the kids.
Mine were 2 and 3 when I was left as a single mum and built the business up. And it is, and I think that, you know, that alone, when I look at them now, they're mums themselves, and they're working mums, and they've got work ethic, and that's what you give to them. I think it's brilliant that you're a fine example of a working mum. Is Simon in the business with you, your husband?
Yes. So Simon retired, in inverted commas, from his professional career 15 years ago now. So when we were in the early years of the business, I realised quite quickly that I wasn't cut out to run a business of this scale. You know, I'm the ideas woman. I'm the one running at 100 mile an hour. Loads of ideas. How we're going to launch this product. We're going to go after that market. Everything like that. and I would just leave a trail of destruction behind me. And the poor staff would have to come along and try and piece it together and pick up the pieces. I am your front woman. I'm the true entrepreneur like that. Simon is the detail guy. Simon's an accountant. So he comes along with a sweeping brush. You know, if I promise to a client we'll have this product in their warehouse by this date, he just makes it happen. You know, and he looks after the warehousing, the logistics. He actually runs the business. So it's a brilliant kind of partnership between the two of us. And we've been like that for 15 years now.
Do you pinch yourself, Sarah?
Often. Very often. And sometimes I think life literally couldn't get any better. And what did I do to deserve something this good?
Well, I suspect that you have lots of plans up your sleeve. And I want to ask you two things. Is there anything that you've done that you've failed at?
I failed my first driving test, and that wasn't good. I think the other big thing is, I remember when I first started the business, so I don't know if you watch much shopping TV, but basically the biggest deal of the day is called the pick of the day or the today's special value or something like that, right? And I remember I'd only had the business 6 months or something, and I'm always looking at the next big thing. So I'd done a few slots on the shopping channel. And I was like, do you know what? I think I'm ready to be a pick of the day. And you're talking like hundreds of thousands in sales now. And I remember going and pitching a product to be pick of the day. And I remember the buyer rejecting it. And at the time, I couldn't understand, because in my head, this product was the best thing since sliced bread and it should get a pick of the day. But I look back now and I think, well, of course they didn't want to take a risk on me. The business was only a few months old. I was a young kid with a head full of magic. Did I have the infrastructure behind me to support a business at that level? Was I trying to run before I could walk? But I didn't understand any of that at the time. I just could see I had this really great idea and the buyer couldn't see it. And honestly, I remember the day that I got the rejection on that and I literally laid on the bed and cried. I just cried for the whole day. It felt like the total end of the world. And I look back now and it's just an everyday occurrence pitching for contracts at this sort of level. But it was the first time in the business I'd experienced kind of failure of me building something up in my head to be a huge success and then it not getting a bite. And I guess in business, it's just something you have to learn to live with on a day-to-day basis. You know, not every project I take on, I can't touch something and it turns to gold. Some things I get right, some things I don't, and I have to work at things as well. And I always remember that first experience. I was still at university. I was running the business out of my university bedroom. And I remember drawing the curtains and lying on the bed and crying for the whole day. It happens to everyone.
My mantra is you can never fail, you only learn. I think it's so true. I don't think there is such a thing as failure. It's all a learning curve. What should I be investing in, Sarah Davis, that you're about to launch or go into?
Well, we've just finished season 20 of The Den filming and it's been a fantastic series. So I'm at that really exciting stage now of all the investments that you commit to in The Den. We start what's called a due diligence process, which is where I have to get my people to come and go through all of their books, go through everything they've said, basically confirm that everything they've told us is right, and then work up a business plan for, okay, so I'm going to put the money in that we've agreed, but then what is the plan? How are we going to spend that money and how are we going to turn this great business idea into this huge success? And I mean, I did 9 investments this series. So that is an awful lot of work on at the moment. So at the moment, I'm trying to juggle. I still work full time in Crafters Companion. My book just launched a few months ago. So I'm still doing a lot of promotion around the book. Thankfully, we finished filming The Den. So I don't actually have any filming time out. However, I still am doing quite a bit of presenting on Morning Live, a few of the TV shows. I've got another big show with the BBC I'll be starting in a few months. And I'm trying to juggle all of that with essentially 9 brand new businesses that need my help and support to get not up off the ground, but up and onto that next level. And it's super exciting, but my whole life is a constant juggle. And then I'm trying to do that against the backdrop of having the 2 kids. And I'm a really hands-on mum. You know, we don't have a nanny or anything at home. I have great grandparent support around me. But even just this morning, my husband's working away in the States this week. So I've had to get their bags ready because I dropped them off at one set of grandparents. My mum's picking them up from there, take them to karate tonight. Maybe their karate outfit's getting ready. I've got to get ready. I've got that overnight TV show in the US tonight that I need to prep for. Literally, it is just a constant juggle of how many plates can I get spinning at one time.
It's interesting because one of my guests last season was the founder of Kids Aloud, and her story is, if you get chance, if ever you're driving or in the car, just listen to it because it's a really interesting story. So we all think, a lot of us think that we are budding entrepreneurs. And I think that with that comes a sense of insecurity. What one piece of advice would you share?
So I get asked this quite a lot, and it's something I've thought about a lot. And I think the me that you are meeting today has got bags of self-confidence. And that is not the me that you would have met 20 years ago. I would have given you the outward persona that I had bags of self-confidence, but inside I wouldn't be feeling it. And I think the big thing is I spent all my life trying to look at every situation I was in and think about who did I have to be to make that work. So, you know, I was 23 when I asked to sit on the board of directors for a big craft and hobby association in the US. And I remember I used to think, well, I used to dress a certain way. I used to try and act a certain way. I was just putting that hat on to be the right person on that day. And it's the same. Every situation I went into, I would put a different hat on and be a different Sarah. And it was only a few years ago I had that realization of, do you know what? They asked me to come along to this. I haven't asked to do this. They've asked me, whether it's to sit on that board, to make that investment, to be on Dragon's Den, to go and be on Strictly, whatever it is, they asked me. So me must be good enough. And this me is good enough. Don't try and be somebody else. Be myself. Getting the Dragon's Den gig was probably the thing that really clinched it for me. I remember going down to do my screen test for Dragon's Den, and the producer tried to give me some words of advice, and she said to me, we think you could be brilliant on this show. You're coming across really well on camera. The only thing is, you're a little bit nice, and it's called Dragon's Den, so we need to see the dragony side of you. And I sat there and I just thought, that's not who I am. And yes, I can go in there on that screen test in this interview and be more dragon-like and be less nice because they've told me to be. And I can put on whatever hat and be whatever Sarah needs to be in that moment. But then I'm going to have to do that every single filming day for as long as I'm on that show. And my brand, what's out there, won't be the real me. It'll be the me that I'm pretending to be sitting in that chair. And that must be exhausting. And also, there's no integrity. I live my life on a really strong set of values, and integrity is one of them. And the biggest thing that means the most to me is when someone meets me, they always say, oh my God, you're just like you were on telly. Or you're just like I thought you were going to be. And I know how disappointed I've been when I've met people from TV and what you think they're going to be, they're not like that. And it's a huge disappointment. And I just think I am myself. And because I've come to that realization of the me that I am is good enough. And that's what's going to go out there every day. So that's the advice I would give to anybody else listening. Go and be who you are.
Sarah, who inspires you?
Do you know what? I am a firm believer that you are a product of the people you surround yourself with. You know, I was lucky enough to meet my husband when I was just 15. And I always joke and say, I feel like I'm a bit of a product of my parents and then my husband. And I think the reason that is I look up to them and I aspire to be like them and to bring, you know, to bring the good bits of all of them. And it's the same everyone I meet. I've met some fantastic women in business. I've met some fantastic men in business over the course of my career. Other investors that I've worked with, the other dragons I have the privilege of sitting on the panel with now. And I spend all my time looking at all these people that I get to spend time with and think, what is it about you that I find really endearing, that I love, that I find inspiring? And how can I take a little bit of that into my life and emulate that? So really, it's a long-winded way of saying a lot of people. If I had to pick one set, I'd say definitely my parents, but certainly a lot of the other business people.
I was just going to say to you, because you've mentioned your parents an awful lot, particularly your dad, and he obviously has been a great source of inspiration, and I think that's the nicest thing about it. You know, it's not been somebody famous or successful or rich or wealthy.
No.
It's been somebody that's loved you and nurtured you and supported you along the journey, and I think that's brilliant. I have had the best hour, Sarah. Please stay in touch. I think you are the most fabulous human being, and now I understand totally 100% why you're such a massive success, and I wish you lots and lots of luck.
Oh, thank you. You know, I've loved chatting to you.
I'm inspired by Sarah because she's everything that everybody should want to be: successful and humble and kind and funny and great company. Make sure you listen to the Air Extension that supports this episode. I'm going to tell you why you don't have to be a dragon. If you've enjoyed this series of events that made me, make sure you've given the podcast a 5-star rating wherever you're listening, and follow me on Instagram at Liz Taylor Consultancy. Check out my website, liz-taylor-consulting.co.uk. And read the book, Tailor Made, available on Amazon.